All right, so let's jump into this. Today we're diving into, well, I think a pretty fascinating area, where copyright law kind of bumps up against the very structure of the internet. We're going to go deep on the Arista Records v. TCatch case, and this one is, well, it's a big one, especially if you're, anyone trying to figure out just who is responsible when online copyright infringement happens. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. This case, it really puts a spotlight on the responsibilities and the potential liabilities, of course, that online service providers face when their users are the ones actually infringing copyright. I think it's a pretty significant shift in how courts are looking at these tech services that on the surface seem pretty neutral.
Right. Like the thing about a service like Cloudflare, for example, can a court actually order them to just stop providing services to websites that are clearly, engaging in copyright infringement? Even if Cloudflare themselves aren't the ones, uploading the music or the movies or whatever it is, that's the core of this whole thing. And to really get why this case is so important, I think we need to go back, set the stage with the original Grooveshark story.
Yeah, definitely. The background here, the backstory, it all starts with the original Grooveshark, the one run by Escape Media Group. They were hit with a huge copyright infringement lawsuit,
No.
massive. And back in 2015, they ended up settling it, a consent judgment. And you'd think, case closed, right? End of story.
But this is where it gets really interesting. Almost as soon as that settlement's done, all these, well, these kind of suspicious copycat sites start popping up, operated by individuals, like Vita to catch. It's almost like, the record companies, they squash one bug and a whole swarm comes out.
Yeah, that's exactly the feeling. So Arista Records, along with other copyright holders, they go back to court, and this time they secure a temporary restraining order, a TRO. And this TRO, it wasn't just targeting, TCatch and the other new folks running these sites. It was targeting anyone who was, well, I'm going to quote here, in active concert or participation with them. That phrase, keep it in mind. It's going to be really important.
It sounds like these new site operators, they had a pretty clear strategy, right? Just keep changing their online address, registering new domain names constantly. It's like a digital game of whack-a-mole or cat and mouse, maybe.
Exactly. It was a huge headache for the copyright holders. Trying to shut them down, really shut them down, was next to impossible. And this is where Cloudflare comes in. They were the ones providing the domain name system services, or DNS, for these copycat Grooveshark sites.
Okay, so for anyone who's not, super familiar with all the ins and outs of internet protocols, let's break down DNS for a second. Imagine the internet is this giant city, right? And website names like, copycatgrooveshark.com, those are like the street addresses. DNS is the map or the phone book. That takes those easy to remember names and translates them into the actual numerical addresses, the IP addresses. Those are the actual addresses that computers use to find the servers where those websites are hosted. So basically, Cloudflare was making sure that these infringing sites could be found online.
Yeah, that's a perfect analogy. And when the copyright holders they went to Cloudflare and they said, hey, you got to stop providing these DNS services. Essentially, take these infringing sites off the map, right? Cloudflare, they refused. Their argument, it basically boiled down to, look, we weren't named as defendants in this TRO, so we're not legally obligated to do anything.
So that leads to a pretty big question, right? Why even go after Cloudflare if they weren't the ones, hosting the pirated music? What was the strategy there?
I mean, the answer, it might seem pretty straightforward, but it's actually really significant. Cloudflare services, they were absolutely crucial to keeping these sites up and running, making sure people could actually get to them, even if the operators kept switching domain names. As long as Cloudflare was there providing the DNS resolution, people could still find and use the sites. It's like if a business kept changing locations but never updated its address, no one will be able to find it.
Right, so the stage is set. You've got the copyright holders trying to stop this blatant infringement, and then you've got this third-party tech provider essentially saying, hey, we just provide the directions. We're not responsible for what happens once you get there, right? But the court, they saw things a little differently, didn't they? And it all comes down to this thing called Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 65-des.
Exactly. This rule, it's the heart of the legal battle, the core of it. It lays out, who is bound by an injunction, and it's not just the parties that are directly named in the lawsuit. It also includes their officers, their agents, and this is the key part. Any non-parties who are, again, I'm quoting here, in active concert or participation with them.
Okay, so the court had to figure out, did Cloudflare, even though they weren't directly involved in the illegal music sharing, did they fall into this active concert or participation category? That was the connection they had to make.
Exactly. And the court, they use a three-part test to figure this out. First, did Cloudflare actually know about the TRO? And the answer to that was a pretty clear yes. They were served with it directly. Second, did Cloudflare continue to provide their services after they got that notice? Again, the answer was yes.
And then there's the third part. And this seems to be where the big legal arguments really happened, right? Was whether Cloudflare's services actually helped, you know, materially aided the defendants in their copyright infringement. This is where Cloudflare, they made their case, a pretty strong one, that their services were passive, automated, just neutral pathways for internet traffic, kind of like, you know, the phone company argument that we talked about earlier.
Yeah, but the court, they weren't buying that neutral pipe argument. They looked closely at what Cloudflare was doing. And yeah, some of their services were automated. But the court said, you know, hold on. Your DNS routing, that internet phone book we talked about, that's directly connecting users to the content that's infringing copyright. And on top of that, they were providing IP shielding, which basically hid where the defendant's servers were physically located. That makes it way harder for copyright holders to track them down and take action. And maybe the biggest thing, they were offering website performance optimization, which means they were making these infringing sites faster. More user-friendly.
So the court was saying, even though these things might be automated, they're not happening in a vacuum. They're actively helping these illegal sites stay online and function better. The fact that it's automated, that doesn't automatically mean Cloudflare is off the hook legally.
Exactly. The court, they really focused on how the specific things Cloudflare was doing were contributing to the copyright infringement. Let's talk about those a little more. We already mentioned the DNS services. Without those, those websites would be practically invisible.
Now, like trying to find a secret club with no address and no password. Good luck with that.
Right. And then you've got the performance optimization. That's not just a small thing. By making the content load faster, including, you know, the copyrighted music, Cloudflare was making the user experience on these illegal sites better. They were making them more appealing and easier for people to use, people who are looking to, you know, get music for free illegally.
And the IP masking, that seems like a big deal too. By hiding where the servers were actually located, Cloudflare was basically making it much harder for the copyright holders to send takedown notices or do anything legally against the people running these sites. It gave them a layer of anonymity that definitely helped them.
Oh, absolutely. And there's this one quote from the court. It's really powerful. And I think it sums up their thinking perfectly. They said, motivations don't matter, only the actuality of assistance. So it didn't matter if Cloudflare was like intentionally trying to help with copyright infringement. The important thing was that their services did help, and that was enough for them to be included in the TRO.
That's a really important point. It's not about what you're thinking. It's about the actual impact of what you're doing.
Hmm.
Now, what about the argument that Cloudflare wasn't the only company that could have provided these services? Did the court care about the idea that there were other potential, you know, phone companies out there?
Not really, no. They basically said, look, even if other companies could have stepped in and done the same things, that doesn't change the fact that Cloudflare was the one doing it at that time. The people suing, they didn't have to prove that the copycat sites would have disappeared completely without Cloudflare. They just had to show that Cloudflare was actively contributing to the problem.
So it wasn't about being the only one enabling this stuff, just being one of the ones actively doing it.
Exactly. And that's a really important detail because it means more people can be held responsible in situations like this. It broadens the scope.
Okay, so we've seen how the court applied this Rule 65 to Cloudflare. Let's zoom out now and look at the bigger picture. Why does this case, Arista v. Dikach, why does it matter so much for online services and copyright law in general? Why should anyone who's interested in this stuff pay attention?
Well, Well, this case sets a pretty big precedent. It's a clear message to online service providers. You can't just hide behind saying you're neutral or that everything's automated when you know about a court order about copyright infringement, especially if it's about your users. If what you're doing is actually helping that infringement happen, even indirectly, you could be legally required to yeah. stop doing it.
So this could mean a lot more legal responsibility and liability for a whole bunch of online service providers. It's not just about DNS providers like Cloudflare anymore. It's web hosting companies, content delivery networks that make websites load faster, maybe even other types of companies in the middle of all this.
Exactly. The practical takeaway here is that these companies, they need to be more careful about who their clients are, especially if a court has already said that those clients are infringing copyright. You can't just ignore those orders, you know, pretend you didn't see them. That's not a safe move anymore. You could get in legal trouble for it.
And this could have some pretty big implications for how copyright is enforced online. Feels like, you know, copyright holders have been playing this never-ending game of whack-a-mole with people who are directly infringing copyright. This ruling, this could give them a new way to fight back, and maybe a more effective way, by putting pressure on the companies that are making it possible for the infringement to happen on a big scale.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And it brings up some really interesting questions about how this all fits in with existing laws, like the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, the DMCA, and its safe harbor provisions. Those provisions, they generally protect online companies from being held responsible for content that their users create as long as they meet certain conditions, like having a system for taking down content when they get a notice that it's infringing copyright. Now, Arista v. Twacek, it's not directly about DMCA safe harbors, but it does suggest that courts they're starting to look beyond just those takedown procedures, especially when a company is actively helping with infringement that they know about, you know, infringement that a court has already said is happening. Yeah. It could mean that courts are changing how they balance the need to protect copyright with the idea that companies shouldn't be held responsible for everything their users do.
So in the end, is this a win for copyright owners? Does this give them a powerful new tool to fight online piracy?
I mean, in a lot of ways, yes. It definitely gives them a stronger way to pressure the companies that are helping infringement happen instead of just focusing on the people who are doing the actual infringing, which can be, you know, really hard to catch. But it's also a tricky situation. There are potential downsides to think about. If copyright holders get too aggressive in going after these companies, it could end up hurting innovation and stopping new online services from developing. Companies might get too scared to try new things, and that could end up limiting what they can do with their platforms and services, even if those things are perfectly legal.
It's that classic problem, right?
Yeah.
How do you protect creative work without accidentally stopping the very technologies that make it possible to create and share that work in the first place?
Exactly. And the Arista v. Takash case, it really brings that tension to light.
Okay, so as we wrap up this deep dive, what's the one thing you want our listeners to remember about the Arista v. Takash case?
The big takeaway is this. If you're an online service provider and you know about a court order, an injunction against copyright infringement, you could be legally obligated to do something to stop your services from being used to violate that order. Even if you're not the one directly infringing copyright, it's not really about what you're intending to do or whether your services are automated. It's about whether what you're doing is actually helping the infringement to continue.
That's a really clear and important point, and it definitely raises some big questions for anyone who's, you know, involved in the online world. What should tech companies be thinking about when they realize that their services are being used for illegal things? How far does their responsibility go? Is it just about processing data and traffic, or is it more than that?
Those are the exact questions that this ruling forces us to ask. This case, it makes us really think hard about what the platforms and services that make up the internet, what they're responsible for, and how we can protect creative work while still encouraging new technology and progress.
Well, this has been a really insightful look at a really important case. Thanks so much for breaking it down and helping us understand all the complexities of it.
Yeah, of course. It was my pleasure. It's a constantly changing area of law, so it's important to stay informed.
And thank you all for joining us for this episode of The Deep Dive. We hope you have a much better understanding of this case and what it means. Until next time, keep asking questions and keep learning.